Hi, I'm Becca Lewis, and this is Shift the Story Podcast. This podcast is the first one in a series called The Reality Shifts, and it's with my husband, Del Piper. It begins at the beginning, how to be awake and calm, and then what happens, how to be accurate in action, or the direct result of being awake and calm. He tells great stories, and he actually explains how we can get calmer, something we all need. So sit back, enjoy, and let's shift the story together.
So, Del, let's do it.
I'm ready to do it.
Okay. Yes. So what's your training in learning how to be calm? It's something most of us have no idea how to do.
Well, my training is, at least how I got started or got the notion of doing this, started with the things in my life when I was quite young. So I guess the training ground was the yard I lived in, the barn that we had on the property, 160 acres of farmland, and having parents who were very busy all the time and really didn't have much time for me, so it was just get out of the house and go do something. And so I found the grass and the stars and the hay mound, and what I did was I just did a lot of daydreaming, and I did not know there was a difference in states of mind. I just was doing what I was doing, and what that was really being in a calm place a lot of the time, but I didn't know how to get there automatically. I just seemed to be there a lot by itself, and I never noticed a change in that till I went to school, where I was made to sit in places and made to sit in classrooms in rows and stand in lines and listen to bells and had to react to the bells and had to be quiet and sit still and sit up and stand up straight and all that stuff. That's when the calm started to disappear. And it wasn't a calm, it was more like I was just unconscious. It wasn't a calm state of mind that I intended to have. It was, I didn't know how to get a hold of that calm state of mind while I was in that place. So, but there was something about that idea of having that background when I was young and doing that kind of thing, that it was still there, it never went away. It just kind of got covered up. It's like Becca talks about with the mist. And so I couldn't see it very clearly. But I always wanted to do something about it. So when I became 18, I saw a thing in the paper about transcendental meditation, and this was back in the 60s. And I lived out in the country, and really out in the boonies. There was nothing like that around, and I don't know, as soon as I read it, I had no idea what it was. I never read anything about it. But I thought, okay, we've got to find out what that is, and then that just kind of sparked another thing, and it really opened that back up, because I was done with that, you have to do this, and you have to do it now, and you have to do it this way, and you have to learn this, and you have to learn that. I was done with that for the time being. And so what I really wanted to pursue was the inner calm, that inner consciousness, that awareness from within. And so I went from that to learning all about Native American people, their philosophies, everything they did, because what I found out with those people is that they really, that's where they grew up with. They grew up with the idea of listening and working within and understanding that inner calm and coming from that deep source of knowing. And so I became apprentices for different elders and medicine people through the years and learned many things from them. So most of it came from them, I would say, as far as formal training about how to find that calm place and stay there, or how to have it at any moment. And
so it was kind of like a natural thing for you that got overcome by the world, and then you learned techniques to be able to bring yourself back to it.
It definitely overcame me, because after, like I say, the first 5 years of sort of life was like, it was a dreamland. It was really an incredible thing. And after that, it just got covered up, and I felt like an idiot. I just didn't know what to do, because it did not fit. I couldn't make it fit with the other stuff that I had to do.
So now that's kind of cool, because your ability to learn how to make your, go back to calm in the middle of what the idiot world does to us is a skill that all of us are looking for.
Yes, and that's the very good thing about this. It isn't that you make it work in this world. It's that you be that, and then the world conforms to that in a way.
Yeah.
It isn't that you make the world conform. It just does by you staying in the right place.
Because you're starting within.
Because you're starting with the right premise of within and the true understanding of what that pure awareness is.
So is that what you mean by awake and calm?
That is. Being awake and calm is being aware of spirit. It's being what physical sense cannot comprehend, and it truly cannot comprehend it. And that's why it is definite when you're in the physical and really doing everything that has, using the physical senses, you really can't comprehend what is spirit. The only way to comprehend spirit is to be spirit. And then you realize the physical really is just an illusion.
So that really works together, that point of view and state of mind. So you can have the point of view that many of us have, that there's only one mind. But without the state of mind of this calm place, you really can't experience it.
True. You cannot.
Okay.
You can mix it up, and then that you always get the mixed result. So the key words here are pure understanding. And that is especially the purity part. You can have understanding, but if it's mixed in a little bit with the physical senses,
mm-hmm.
You're going to get mixed results, always. And that's the same thing as saying it'll be good now, it'll be bad later. It gets mixed up. It goes through cycles. And when you're in the calm place, there are no cycles there. There are no opposites. So it's a very calm, stable place, like it says.
I'm sorry for interrupting you.
I'm sorry.
But I know that you've talked a lot about that tracker guy, Tom Brown, that you studied with.
Yeah, that's right. There's a famous tracker known over the world. He learned from an Apache elder that he called grandfather. The Apache elder's name was Stalking Wolf. And Stalking Wolf traveled the world for 60 years. And the reason he did that was to find out the truth. And he wanted to find out the truth with a capital T. Not just the truth of, the moment of, well, here I am and what's true for me now. And it was the deepest truth he could know, the purest truth possible. And he spent 60 years doing that. And he didn't start on his quest till he was in his 20s. So after 60 years of doing that, then he met Tom Brown Jr. and a friend of his, who at that time they were 8 years old, and Stalking Wolf was in his 80s. And he started to teach them the ways of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he called it. And he said, Tom Brown told me the first teaching that he got from Stalking Wolf was he told him to slow down. He had to teach 2 8-year-old kids how to slow down. Because he said, even at our young age, we'd already got caught up in the unthinking rush of society. We were chasing irrelevant goals. We were gauging our actions by clocks and living with our eyes focused on the future.
Wow. And that was at 8, and that was a long time ago, too. That wasn't now. We're even worse about doing that.
Oh, my, we're much worse. Everything is much quicker and faster and hurry up, and yes.
So when you were practicing that calm state of mind, did people understand what you were doing?
No, I would say they didn't. And there's a good story that kind of shows that when you see that calm state of mind in somebody and we misinterpret it. And again, when you use the physical senses to attempt to interpret something that is going on in spirit, you can't do it. It comes out looking like, and you'll see from this story, you'll see what it comes out looking like. There was an organic farmer who was an individual who really wanted to show everybody up around him how to do it differently. And it was more of a competitive thing, but he was just so energetic about really doing it and doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
He was like most people. We had to hurry up and get it done. It's all about,
let's
go.
Be organic, but hurry up.
Be organic, but let's go. Come on, let's do it. And he also was very interested in taking care of the forests that were on his land. So he brought me in to do that because this was in the early 80s and I had an intuitive forestry business, which I still do, and I was just really starting that. And he found out about me, so he brought me in, and he wanted me to go look at, go walk through his forest and tell me what I thought of the trees and what needed to be done. And so I said, okay, and I began to walk back towards the woods. It was a quarter mile to half a mile back to his woods through a field from his house. And I started walking back, and as I did that, that's when I intentionally go into that calm state of mind, because that's where I come from. When you're dealing with things at all, anytime, you want to be in that calm state of mind. And so with each step I took going towards the forest, I would calm myself into that calm state of mind, that calm stability. And I became more awake to what is spirit. Less awake, or actually less mesmerized by what the physical was doing. Mm-hmm. And the physical began to dissolve. And then you hear things that come from a deeper understanding and a more pure awareness. And as I look at the trees, you don't feel much separation. In fact, you don't feel any separation at all from the trees or the plants or the ground or anything. And then as I was coming back from the forest, I was obviously, I didn't know that I was, but I was told later I was obviously walking very slow. And when I got back to the house to talk to the farmer, he said, "Good God, man, I've never seen anybody that walks so slow. I thought you would never get back here." And he was quite actually irritated that, you know, I took so long. I said, "Well, I thought it wasn't slow to me. I was in that place where I could really see what was going on and hear what was going on." Because as with anything, any particular moment in time, everything is in balance and harmony. And we want to keep it that way. And from the pureness of spirit, it's always in balance, always in harmony. So you don't want to disrupt that. So you stay there. And then any action you do, you make sure the action, you don't even have to make sure, the action you do will coincide with the balance and the harmony.
Well, you know what, that when you were talking, I thought it reminded me of that Bible statement, and I'm not saying it right at all, but be out of the body and in with the Lord.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and so in a way, that's what you're saying. You're out of the material sense and in with the spiritual awareness, and that gave you and gives you that awareness of everything being one, which everybody so desires
yes.
to have.
And that's the thing. It's right there all the time. It doesn't go anywhere. It isn't a place where, you know, well, I got to drive down Interstate 90 to find this place, and, you know, it's 10 miles away. No, it's right there, right now. If that's it. There it is. It's right there within you.
Yeah. So you're saying that being awake is kind of a shift from...
Yeah, it's a shift from the perceived normal everyday awareness of seeing all things from the viewpoint, you know, of the physical senses and the surface. And it has no depth. The physical senses have no depth at all. And you shift that to a heightened awareness of pure understanding, pure intent, and that transcends all physical interpretation and reasoning to that of the spirit, to the abstract.
So I know you use that word abstract. So what do you mean by abstract?
Well, I call it the abstract because the physical or mortal senses cannot see, hear, touch, taste, or know the essence of spirit.
So when we're trying to understand spirit or the one from what our senses tell us, we're going to miss it.
Yes. Yes, if you use the physical senses to attempt to get to spirit, you won't get there. It'll always be interpreted from the physical senses. And the physical senses always get it wrong.
Isn't that funny? Because that's what that's like everybody says, well, I'll see it, I'll believe it when I see it.
Exactly.
But it's actually the opposite.
And look, and that goes back to the training. Look at the training. I mean, I had no training in making the physical senses the main witness, the testament, to give testimony. The first 5 years, it was almost non-existent. And then I got the training in, okay, it's all about the physical senses. And we're going to make sure that's all you know when you get out of here.
So that's like the mesmerism to keep you locked in the world.
It does. It was control. And you don't know it's control unless you finally get to that within place. And that's the true freedom.
Right.
The freedom is within.
Oh, I love that, because we talk about the shift is from within, but really the freedom is from
total
within.
Freedom, and that is the goal. It's like Don Juan talked about in the Carlos Castaneda books, the goal of all sorcerers, and sorcerers are not what we've been told they are. Sorcerers are people who want infinite awareness.
Want it or have it? Or
they want it, and that's what they seek. And then when they have it, they don't want to go back to the pain of the everyday world. That's insane.
So they're not magicians manipulating material world.
Not at all.
They're aware of the infinite.
They're not interested in the material world.
So that's another thing I think is interesting, is that the false view of this is that as you become more aware of spirit, you become more materially magical. And really, that's exactly the opposite. You become less and less interested.
Less and less interested, and yet everything is right there for you.
So you have everything.
But
you didn't make it happen.
It was there all along. It is there all along.
So that kind of leads me to my next question, is what does being calm, awake and calm, do for you? It does that.
Yeah. Well, what it does is when you are calm and stable, pure in awareness, the divine intent is ever apparent. Nothing will obscure your vision. True autonomy, this is interesting, true autonomy is present, and you can deal with whatever arises in the absolute most appropriate way.
Well, and that's your accurate in action, I guess you're saying.
So you're not dealing with things through a limited sense and not reacting to things. You deal with things through pure understanding.
And you don't have to think things through your senses?
You don't have
to figure things out. I guess that's what I mean.
As soon as you go to physical senses and you rely on the physical senses to give you testimony and give them the witness stand, you're in trouble. You're in the whole world. It comes as a package deal of now you've got cycles, opposites, and it's guaranteed. You'll flip from one place to another all the time. You'll go through the cycles. None of those things exist in spirit. And pure awareness.
Well, I think a lot of people would think, well, if you become awake in spirit, you become stupid in the world. And I know that that isn't actually true. And you have that really cool story about your brother-in-law.
Yes, this was many, many, many years ago, several decades ago. I had a brother-in-law who all of a sudden disappeared. Nobody knew what happened to him, where he went, nothing.
He kind of ran away or...
Later on we found out he intended it completely, but he didn't tell anybody.
He just disappeared.
One day he's gone. And after a couple of days, the whole family, several members of the family, are really concerned. And, of course, there's some very highly intellectual people that were in this family, and they knew they had the answers. They were going to figure out how to find him.
Yeah.
And one individual looked and looked for a couple days and had no luck whatsoever. And I didn't do anything because I let it just go to a place where then I knew it was time to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, again, I felt that from within. And I said, I'll go find him. Or actually, I said, I'll go get him.
Oh, that's a very different statement.
Yes, I'll go get him and I'll talk to him. Whether he'll want to come back, I don't know, but I'll go get him, I'll go talk to him, and... And, of course, everybody in family looked at me like,
yeah, right.
You don't know where he is. Look at, what do you know?
You're so calm.
You don't react nothing. You're like dead. What do you know? So, anyway, I just got in the car and left. And really, literally within 45 minutes, I drove into the driveway where he was at, in a place where there is absolutely no way I could have figured that out. Through the physical senses.
You didn't know where he was.
I had no idea where he was in the physical realm of things. In spirit, I knew, I'll just go right to him. And that's what I did. I took the most direct route, and it was really, you come here, and it was just turn left. Oh, I'm going to turn here. I'm going there. And I didn't try to make something happen. I knew he was there, and I knew I would drive right to him. And when I got there and drove in, he was sitting at a picnic table. With a girlfriend.
Oh, it becomes
and
clear.
The most shocking expression I have ever seen in my life went over his face when I got out of the car. Because he didn't know my car right at that time. I had a different car that he wasn't aware of. And when I got out of that car, he just turned white. And he blubbered and he couldn't talk right. And then finally he said, "How did you find me?" I said, "Because people need to know what's going on, and they need to hear what you're going to say about it." So he gave me a message and told him, "Okay, tell him this." And I said, "Do you want people to get a hold of you? Do you have a phone number?" "Okay, give him this." And then I left, and everybody was totally shocked. "What? You drove right there? And well, where's he at?" I said, I can't tell you that. If he wants to tell you, here's a phone number, call him. I'm done. That's all I'm doing."
So that awake and calm place really made it accurate in action, from within.
Totally accurate. And there are degrees of that you can go to. But again, when you first start to learn and understand what is that calm place, you'll have mixed results. It'll work sometimes, it won't, because
the result.
We don't know how to use it. We think we got to use it, and that's probably the biggest thing. But that's based on physical senses. We think, from human senses and human mind, that we got to use it for something.
It's kind of like thinking that sorcerers manipulate material.
Yes.
World.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I know you've talked about Don Juan and what he says about that.
Yeah, Don Juan calls it inner silence, but he refers to the inner silence, and he defines it as a peculiar state of being in which thoughts were canceled out and one could function from a level other than that of daily awareness. So we called it inner silence because it is a state in which perception doesn't depend on the senses.
Oh, that's so key.
That is totally key. Yeah, you let go of the physical senses. So, it's the practice of being the calm and softening of an external standpoint will return you to what you were like before you started believing you are human, or what looks like birth, to a state of openness, which is beyond the physical senses. And in the state of calm, really, you're mindless. And I don't mean mindless with a big M. I mean the small M mindless.
Like small R reality.
Like small R reality. So, meaning that the mind that is a small M, small R reality mind, the human sense mind that the immortals of the Taoist, I repeat that, the immortals of the Taoist.
Immortals.
Immortals. It means they didn't die. Hello?
Okay.
Now, the immortals of the Taoist call this the stirring mind. That's that small M mind. They call it the stirring mind. And here, in place of the stirring human sense mind, is the shining mind, which is the mind of Tao, the one mind.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and the Taoists always say, eliminate the stirring mind and keep a hold of the shining mind. In fact, there's a lot of things they say to that because they really make a lot of emphasis on this. Because the shining mind is always calm. In action, it responds to myriad changes. And even when active, it is essentially always calm. And the wandering mind is always stirring. Hmm. And even in quiet, when you're quiet, it produces myriad thoughts. And you'll recognize that. You'll see it. If you just close your eyes and try to keep from thinking anything, you'll realize, my God, things just go like crazy. I mean, the thoughts are just going all over the place. And even the more you try to control it, at first, it's like the more it gets out of hand. So, and that's why they say even when quiet, it is basically always a stir. And then they always said, you always extinguish the stirring mind, but you don't extinguish the shining mind. And again, the shining mind is that mind of Tao. That is that one mind. And the wandering mind is that human mind.
I like that word, shining mind, because it makes me think of how when you know truth, it shines through the mist and reveals what's already present. So I don't know if they meant it that way, but I like it that way.
Yeah, yeah. So what else do you think?
Well, I think at this point, since we've talked about, I know there's a lot more we could talk about being calm, but at this point, why don't you just take people are probably saying, well, okay, that's cool. I see why it's valuable to be calm, and I see that it's valuable to be awake and calm, and I actually see that my action will be more accurate if it starts from the right premise, but how do I get calm? So what's it? I know you have a technique that you call the calm stability countdown.
Yes.
So what is that, and how do you do it?
Okay, this is the calm stability countdown. Is, you know, really, it's just a really simple tool. It is, you know, like if you went to the tool shed and you're a gardener, you at first you're going to grab the simplest tool you have. You know, it might be a shovel. It's a very simple tool, and the tool only gets you to a certain place. You know, it's like if you took a shovel out of the the tool shed and you go and you dig up the garden with it, or a rake, as soon as you're done digging up the garden, you don't hang on to the shovel.
Right.
You don't strap it to your back or try to stuff it in your pocket somehow and identify with that shovel. You let go of the shovel and then you move on. The tool, the countdown tool, what it does, it gets you to that opening idea of leaving that rut of human thinking and that place where the stirring mind is. So how we do the countdown, we start out very, very basic, very simple. And we count down usually from 10 to 0 first. And to do the countdown from 10 to 0, you find a comfortable place. You sit on a couch, in a chair, you lie down, you close your eyes, you listen to your breathing a little bit, you just start to relax. And then you inhale, and on exhale, you'll think to yourself the first number, 10. And with that number 10 and the exhale, you also feel the body relax and just let go of tension all the way down from the top of your head to the tip of your toes. So you feel that release of tension with the countdown number. You'll inhale again and exhale the next number, 9, and the same procedure. So you feel that progressive relaxation. Because in its simplest terms, spirit is found right, you know, as you begin to relax. And as you notice, we are trained and conditioned in the opposite place. Don't be relaxed. Keep it going. Hurry up. So the basic countdown just gets you out of that mindset, that state of mind of being tense and uptight and worried, angry, hurt, things like that. It takes you out of that long enough so you can feel that calmness. So as you count down and you get down to 0, you stay there for a few minutes and you feel the calm. And you'll start to notice thoughts coming in, or maybe there'll be thoughts that come in as soon as you finish. But it doesn't matter. As you see the thought come in, you just watch it go by as if you were sitting under the clouds watching the clouds go by, which is something I used to do a lot when I was that little kid laying on the grass. Mm-hmm. I would watch those clouds just drift on by. No thoughts. And then thoughts are like that. Just let them drift on by. Don't attach anything to them. Don't try to grab them and hold on to it. Don't try to interpret it. Nothing. Just let it go by. Observe it. See it. Let it go. Observe it. See it. Let it go. And then just feel yourself staying calm, calm, calm. After a few minutes of doing this, and then you want to move on with your day, then you can just tell yourself where you're at, reorient yourself to the room, and when you're ready, just open your eyes and calmly get up and remember the feeling of what that's like to have that calm state of mind. Because as you practice this, and really it takes practice, when you went into the school for the physical sense training and how to stay in the human stirring mind training, you had to practice to be there. Do you realize that? You had to practice and practice and practice. You spent at least 8 hours a day practicing having a stirring mind.
At least.
So if you think you can go and do this countdown one time, once a week, and everything I shot should be just great, it's not, really. You have to do it a lot. Because as you do it, you get more and more of the sense of what it is to be calm. And then you can make that you, because it is you, really. That really is you. And then when you come from that place, you respond to things in the most appropriate way there is possible to respond to it at that point. And you don't react to things.
I think that there's two things that you said that Well, a couple things rolling around in my head, which is one that it doesn't actually matter. You do have to practice, but you experience the benefits from it, even if you can only count down from 10 to 9. I mean, you begin to experience what it feels like to be calm no matter where you start from. So that's the first thing I'm thinking, that as I become better at it, I experience more, but it happens as soon as you begin to even start the process.
And why is that? Because as soon as you started, you left that place that you've been habitually chained to and sucked into and rutted into. So you're right. So even one number, that's a start.
It's a start. And sometimes, I notice that sometimes I'm much more stirred up than I think, that I can't get past 9. Mm-hmm. I forget where I am, and I'm off into some la-la land. And then wait a minute, I'm supposed to be calming down, and I go back to 10. And other times it's easy, but often it's not.
Well, that brings up a good point. When you do, as you do this countdown, as you do 10 to 0, if you lose track of where you're at, you have to start over.
Which is amazingly happens.
It does happen, yeah, absolutely. And as you progress, if you want to get deeper, go into a deeper, deeper awareness, what you want to do is either do it again, do the 10 to 0 again, and mm-hmm. then maybe do it again, or start it out with a larger number. Start it out with 25.
Yeah.
Start it out with 50. You'll get better and better at that, but it's not the high numbers. That's not what that's
it's a, like not
there
like
was a lady who was
competition yoga
who said oh it just jumped right on. Oh, I did 500 yesterday. Well, it's not a competition.
Yeah.
So if the idea is you shouldn't have to do it at all after a while, just there you are, you know the difference, you know, you have that discernment to know this is the calm mind, I am that.
Well, that's the other part that I was thinking, is how even though I don't always stay in the calm, I know the difference.
Yeah.
And something happened today that I noticed that, because I got an email from a woman who was very upset about something that actually she was wrong about what she was upset about. I know what happened. She looked at something and she thought it was my fault. And then she wrote me this really email going, oh my gosh, how did you do this to me, which mm-hmm. I hadn't. And so I noticed first that she must not have been, she obviously wasn't calm, because she immediately reacted to something without stopping to think that it couldn't possibly be what she thought.
Yeah.
And then I noticed that I had a minor reaction, like, well, how dare she think I would do such a thing? It was very minor, but I could tell the difference from being calm and being that tiny bit upset. And then it was so easy to just do one or two breaths and say, this has nothing to do with her. She's not really this person. Mm-hmm. I'm not this person. And could answer her calmly, and then took her totally out of it. Within 5 minutes, she realized it was all done within 5 minutes.
Yes, yes.
But that idea, what you said, you can tell the difference.
Right.
After a while, it becomes so obvious that you're not calm.
Yes, it is. And that's the whole idea, is you become very aware of, oh my God,
that you're in reaction instead of,
you know, accurate. And we don't know that until we start to do these countdowns and find the calm place. And then the calm place, you know, we get closer and closer to the understanding of the purity of that place. And again, it isn't going to be the amount of numbers you're able to count down from.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the quality of, you can go from 1 to 0 and have it. You can go and have it.
Yes.
You can have it. You have it. I am it. See, that is it. It is not, oh, I got to work. Okay, now I'm up to 15,000 to 0. It's like, well, what?
Oh,
you know, 2 days later or what? I don't know. You know, you have it, but you live that. That's why the number, that's like the shovel. It's like thinking, well, if one shovel's good, I should get 50 shovels.
And attach them all to your back.
And all of me. I got to bring them all out of the tool shed. And you know, to get that one job done, or get, you know, to have this thing happen here and now. No, that's not the idea at all.
Well, there's one other little piece that you sometimes talk about when you do the calm stability countdown, that when you get there, that wide angle vision or the 360 vision, you talk about
right.
that a little bit.
So this comes into play, it comes into play more about understanding it after you've done countdown enough where let's move into the idea of keep the eyes open and do the countdown. Which some people have said it's easier, some said it's harder. But still, you do it with your eyes open, because that's what you do. You should have, you can be calm regardless. Eyes closed, eyes open, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Moving, not moving, it doesn't matter. You have it. You have it. And so at first, you might be have a tendency to focus on things and be distracted by things. What will help that and keep you from being having tunnel vision is this 360-degree circular soft vision. And what that is it's really peripheral vision. So it is how you do peripheral vision and understand that is hold your hands out to the side, your arms outstretched to your side, and put your fingers up in the air. Wiggle your fingers, and then bring the hands forward toward the front. And when you see the fingers wiggling on each side, that is your limit of perception and view of the peripheral vision right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do the same thing with the top and the bottom. You'll put a hand stretched over the top and start to bring it down until you can see the fingers wiggling. And that's your top, and then do the same thing on the bottom. And then you start to see that 360 degrees, that circle you have. And you don't focus on anything in particular unless you want to identify something. And then you will zoom in on something. If you'll catch a movement within that larger frame of reference now. You'll catch a movement, you can zoom in on it, identify it, and then go right back to the wide vision. And what that does, it will calm you down even more, because just doing that training right there will calm you down.
Yeah.
So it's a very good thing to add in with the countdown. And then, like I say, doing the countdown, after you've done it with eyes closed, you can increase it to get it to a deeper sense of it. But know that you can have that deepest sense, even with just a 1-0 or nothing, just have it right now. Now, I am that. So, and then you practice it by open your eyes so you can have that same awareness and sense, that deep, calm sense anytime with your eyes open or closed. You can start to, when you go for a walk, do the countdown while you're going for a walk. Do it at your work. When you find a place where you're getting all bent out of shape,
mm-hmm. Do
a countdown with your eyes open, sitting at your desk or whatever you're doing. Watch how you get out of that rut.
That tunnel vision that
the
you
The tunnel
talk
vision,
about.
Yes, because the physical senses develop tunnel vision all over the place. So anytime you're in a physical senses, you have tunnel vision. And so that's the practice of it. Right.
Actually,
there.
That's the world view, is to have tunnel vision.
It is, because that way we can only see little tiny things at a time, and we get all, and that's why we tell stories about the tiny things over and over and over and over, and over again.
Yeah, that's actually
yes.
So true. When people visit elders who mm-hmm. haven't kept their vision open, their world has narrowed down to what they
yeah.
ate yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And Don Juan talks about, you know, there was a day when man was a very, very magical idea, and everything were able to do incredible things, and because they came from a different place altogether. And he puts it as predators got a hold of us.
Mm.
And the predators really symbolically are the awareness eaters. They eat up our awareness and force us to focus in on tiny things and tunnel
mm-hmm.
vision and have a lot of fear. Everything we do is fear-based. There's not enough, or if we have a lot, we're afraid we're going to lose it or something. There's always some fear, and the fear does not exist in spirit. There is no such thing in spirit, not pure spirit.
So if you're awake and calm, you're awake in that place where there is no fear, and that leads to what you talk about, which is what is accurate in actions. So
right.
What kind of action? So what do you mean by that?
Well, the accurate in action, it's a reflection of what results from the awakened calm. It really is. It's,
yeah.
And it does, it isn't something you have to try to do. It just, there it is.
It just is.
It, because spirit is always active. Mind is always active. Pure activity all the time. And, you know, so that's like the story about the farmer. I mean, he looked at the calm state of mind that I was in and said, oh, you're lazy. Well, it's just the opposite. The amazing things that, that humans might see with their human mind really stem from that place. Truly miraculous. As Don Juan says, inconceivable things.
Imagination.
Happen from that place, yes. Einstein calls it the imagination.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And so from this viewpoint, there is nothing to fix or to put right. There's no effort that has to be made to get something.
And, you know, then there's that other side, inaccurate inaction. So if you're not really coming from the calm place, the things that we all experience that aren't working well, but it can happen because we're coming from the material seven senses, the five senses. I don't know where seven senses came from. Maybe there's more, but the five senses come from. Then things don't go right. And I love that story you tell about the tree.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because it defined it before you, because it shows you the accurate inaction you were coming from,
right,
and the inaccurate inaction that the other person was coming from, and the results of both.
Yeah, and there's a professor, what's his name, Irwin Corey. He said if we don't change direction soon, we'll end up where we're going. And I like that quote because it's very relation to this relationship, has a good relationship to this story because. Mm-hmm. If you leave that sense of calm with the idea of I'm going to do it my way with a separate mind, that small M mind, well, guess what? You just bring all that into play. Again, you bring all the problems, and that is where things always need fixed in that state of mind. Mm-hmm. Always. Guaranteed. You like problems? You
stay
like all
human.
That stuff? Stay there. Stay in the physical senses. Guaranteed you'll always have it. You'll never get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's part of it is, don't you want to get rid of this? And you try to get rid of it based in that context, and you make more of it someplace else to fix over there.
Right.
It's like that balloon thing, you know, like you have a water balloon, it's got a bulge out the top, so you squeeze the top, and you go, oh, there, got rid of that. But you can't see underneath, it's bulging out down there now, and but you'll see that later. So, but this story is great to show how there is that calm state, and something comes from that. And if, when you leave that, well, you get that packaged with it, that human sense package of opposites and problems, and wow, it's they seem to come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Which really they do.
Which they do, yeah.
Well, anyway, here's the story. There was a contractor in a small town in northeast Ohio, and I was working with him, and I was the tree guy. I was a tree man. Because I was the guy who, you know, he always talked to about, tell me about these trees. You know,
that's the intuitive force.
The intuitive stuff, how, you know, I want to know the depth of it, you know, the understanding, the meaning, the symbolic meaning of the tree, all of that stuff. Well, anyway, he got a job at this library to clear some land because they were expanding the library and they needed more parking space. So they bought some land adjacent to the library. It had brush and weeds and some trees on it, and he was to leave some of the trees, but he did not know trees well, so he wanted me to look them over and get a feel for that and come from that place I do and say, okay, tell me what trees to take, to stay, what to do, whatever, just tell me. So I go and I do that calm thing, and I listen, and I observe, and I see what's going on, and I tell him, and I said, there's some come out, there's some over here to stay, but I said, this one in particular, hit this one right here, and I pointed this, it's not a really pretty tree. I said, leave that tree there. And he looked at it, and he even looked at it, like, huh, really, that one? I said, yeah, leave it there, okay? It has to stay. I'm sorry, you may not like it, whatever, but look, are you going to leave it? Okay, I'll leave it, all right. So I have to go uptown to make an errand for him, and I go uptown, and I come back, and I drive in the driveway, and I'm shocked when I drive in the driveway, because where that tree was, now there's a big hole in the ground. He's got his backhoe bucket hanging over the hole. He's off the backhoe, standing by the bucket, really looking it over very closely and doesn't look too happy at all. And he stands up and he's scratching and shaking his head, and I get out of the vehicle and I come over and I look at the bucket, and there's this big backhoe bucket, real heavy metal, very large backhoe bucket, and the end of it is ripped like you would rip a piece of paper. And it had this, it was a long rip, about 8 inches long. And the separation from the end pieces were probably 6 to 8 inches wide apart. It was just unbelievable. So I go and I stand at the front of the backhoe because I'm a little astonished that he dug out that tree. But anyway, he comes over and he stands by the big tire, the back rear tire of the backhoe. And he's between that tire and his trailer. He has an equipment trailer right there, and it's facing him. The back end of it is facing him and the tire. And it's on level ground. It's on a jack in the front. It's not hooked to a truck. It's just sitting on a jack. But he starts his tirade about it. He said, "I just don't get it." He said, I dug that thing up," and he said, "pulled it over there, and I looked at my backhoe and look at it, and it's got this huge rip in it like that." He said, "So I jumped down in that hole with a shovel, and I dug and dug," and he said, "there's absolutely nothing in that hole that could have done that. It's just soft dirt." I said, "Oh, okay." So I said, "So Denny, why did you take that tree out? You said you would leave it there. Wasn't that the agreement?" He said, "Yeah, that thing was so damn ugly." I said, and as soon as he said that, as soon as he's done saying that, that trailer just took off. It come right at him. It was only about 8 feet away. It come right at him, I mean, quite fast. And he just was able to jump out of the way. And then, you know, he's on the trailer because he leaped straight up and was able to stand on the trailer. It did hit the tire. And then he just lost and said, "My God," he said, "what the heck is going on?" And then he looked at me and said, "Okay, what the heck kind of tree was that?" I said, "That was an Ailanthus altissima, Denny." And he said, "What is that?" I said, "It's a tree of heaven." And that's when he just turned white. And it's interesting, this story is not about a tree of heaven. Right. I mean, about right. Should it be there, should it? Because if you ask horticulturists, they're going to say, "Get that thing out of there. It's one of the worst trees you can have around. It's a weed tree. It, you know, it produces too many seeds. It doesn't smell good. It's toxic to the plants and everything." And that has nothing to do with anything except right then, at that moment, that tree needed to be there. And that, who knows why?
Right.
If we try to use physical senses to make reason out of it, mm-hmm. that's why I say you can't see the reason. You can't.
But you can be aware of it.
You can be aware of it and know, "Oh, okay, I'm very sure that stays here. We'll see why." That's like the old Taoist Chinese story about the farmer who had the horse, and you know, had his favorite horse, and the horse ran away, and everybody, all the neighbors said, "Oh, that's too bad." And he said, "Is it? I don't know that." And then pretty soon the horse comes back with another horse, a nice, beautiful stallion. Then everybody said, "Oh, how wonderful, how good." He said, "Is it? We'll see." And then later on, his boy is riding the horse all over the place and enjoying the horse and gets thrown off and breaks his leg. And everybody's, "Oh, that's too bad. Is it? We'll see." And then a year later, the war breaks out and all the young guys are called to the army, and 9 out of 10 of all the young people get killed, and his boy doesn't have to go because of his leg problem. And everybody says, "Oh, that's good." He says, "Is it?" And again, it just goes on and on and on. In the physical realm of things, you don't know.
Right.
It's going to go all over the place.
You can't fix anything.
And we always try to make something happen. And the harder we try, something will happen, guaranteed. And it'll take two shapes, good and bad.
So it goes, you call that the bounce back, right?
Yeah, I call it the bounce.
The bounce.
It's like throwing a rubber ball against the wall. It's going to come back. You don't know exactly in what way, what direction. But in spirit, none of that is going on. In pure spirit, pure understanding of what is one mind, that doesn't exist. Mind is perfect. Mind always takes care of itself. If there is only one, then that is our identity. That is our starting point.
Well, and that's what I think I love about that statement, awake and calm, because that's really, that's where it's starting from. It's saying when you're awake, you're aware of what the big R reality is. You're not blinded by the worldview. And it kind of reminds me, you know, when we're, you know, the gracious steps that we have.
Right.
And the letter A in gracious is angel ideas. And the idea behind angel ideas is that when you're calm, then you actually hear angel ideas, or what some people might call a still small voice. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily it's a voice. You just have an awareness of the angel idea. And those angel ideas always lead you to action, always.
Right.
But
yeah.
Even though sometimes the action is a non-action, it's not an on-action of I'm running and hiding. It's a non-action, nothing needs to be done. Like you were saying, when you went to find your brother-in-law, you waited until you heard the perfect time to go. You just
yes.
didn't up and run because you knew.
I didn't react.
You didn't react.
It wasn't a reaction. It wasn't, there was nothing there to do. And there wasn't. And it was like, you know, well, it is a stirring mind. It's all stirred up and it's doing what it does. It stirs everything up and it's, okay. There's a calm place in there. And when that happens, oh, I respond. And it's the most appropriate response at the time.
Yeah, and I've seen you do that through the years of waiting for the
yes.
perfect time.
And really, inconceivable things happen and have always happened around me. And it's not because of any physical thing. It just does.
Well, you know, and I was just saying that, how do you know, and I think you've already answered this question, and we're almost at the end of our time anyway, but how would you know, how do you know what the difference is between accurate action and inaccurate action? How do you know?
It's based on that state of mind. When I'm in a calm state of mind, there's nothing to do, really. I don't have a sense of I've got to do something. I've got to make this happen. It doesn't exist there. Now, when I'm not in that state of mind, when I'm in a false state of mind, the air of the small mind, the small M mind, that small R reality thing, I'm thinking, really, just like everybody else thinks when they're there, I've got to do something. Oh, geez, I've got to work harder. Oh, my God, I got to, oh, you know, and then a guilt. Oh, I should have. Why didn't I? Oh, what a dope. Oh, and then back to the other place. Oh, geez, I'm pretty good. Wow, look what I did. Oh, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It just bounces all over the place. And that's really how you know you're there.
Because of the bounce.
It's bouncing, and you're feeling a human thought about, I gotta, I shoulda, I'm afraid, wow, am I something, oh, look at me. I mean, they're all really the same thing.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's like the positive attitude thing is, it's like physicists say about positive thoughts and positive thinking. Positive thinking just covers up negative patterns. It all has to go. It all has to dissolve, and then there is pure spirit.
So some people might say that what we're talking about is positive thinking, but what we're really talking about is a perception shift to what's
yes.
really true.
Yes.
And then you can make a true statement even though while you're looking at what's not true right in the face.
Yes.
And not running and hiding.
And all the religions really in the deepest sense of it say the same thing. The Taoists say, you know, it is that calm, stable place. That is the place. Don Juan says it, Tom Brown talks about it, Stalking Wolf says it, Mary Baker Eddy talks about it, and it's letting go of that personal sense of things, personal sense of life. Every one of those people say, let go of personal sense, get rid of personal sense.
And personality,
get rid of it.
And the way you do that is not by fighting it, but
you
by going to the awakening.
Yes,
calm.
That's what does it. That's what, in fact, the Chinese, the Taoists say that reversing is what people have to do when they have this ordinary thing going on, which is really the human mind, the stirring mind, leading them all over the place, up, down, in, out, all over, all the time. Hurry up. And the reverse of that is to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
Calm, eliminate the thoughts, eliminate the stirring mind. Don Juan says exactly the same thing. Stalking Wolf says exactly the same thing. Mary Baker Eddy talks about let go of the human sense of things. Mortal mind has to go. Personal sense has to leave. They all say the same thing.
She says the realm of the real is spirit.
Yes.
Yeah. They all say, it's true, they all say the same thing. We just add our own little personal touches on it and religion onto it and forget that they've all actually all said the same thing.
It takes practice, but how do you know how to practice? Until you touch the deep sense of that calm, you don't know what do you mean? You know, I'll do the countdown. I did it yesterday. You know, and I should be.
You did it last year.
How come the miracles aren't? How come I can't whip up some miracles here? That, look, we've had years and years and years of practice being a stirring mind.
Well, that's why I think this is the perfect place to start with this call, the reality shift, because it's hard, going back to the idea of perception, the state of mind and point of view. There's, as I said, there's many people that understand the point of view that what we observe is not the actual reality that we're looking. If we look through it, we would see spiritual.
Yeah.
But how to do that, how to get out of the emotional state of mind that most of us are in to the calm state of mind is really one of the very first steps.
Yes, and you'll see it in different places at different times, and that's why you want to focus and pay attention to the things you see out there as far as what's this telling me now? Am I aware of what it's saying? It is like when I home-taught my kids, I watched them go to school, and that's when the awareness really deepened for me about, whoa, what's going on? Because I really participated with my kids the first 5 years. Before they went to school, I did everything with them. You know, we did calm things, we did walks, we did you name it, we did it out there. And then they went to school, and I saw strangers coming home. I didn't know who these people were. They were losing who they were, and that scared me. And that's when I went, okay, I got to do something. But that I got a thing really got me into some problems. But it also, there was the other part, which was the calm part. I could feel, oh, this is, I'm doing this. And even though it feels out there in the world, they're telling me, you can't do that, you can't do that. And I almost went to jail for it because.
Because you were homeschooling, so make that clear. That's what you were doing, homeschooling.
Yeah, be homeschooled.
At
because
a time when nobody else was doing it.
It wasn't allowed. It wasn't allowed. And, you know, they were trying to keep a stirring mind going. And I was going, wait, this isn't working. And nothing ever happened to me because I immediately went back to the calm state of mind and, you know, at every opportunity. So I did a lot of practice.
Well, I think that's a great place for us to end because what you said was your children were losing who they were.
They were.
But returning to the awareness and the calm, which is all we all have. We all feel in many ways we've lost who we were, but we really haven't. It's just been covered up with that worldview. So we're not creating anything or making anything change. We're finding who we always have been. And we talk about this a lot in the shift, the unique spiritual blessing that each one of us is for. We are that unique expression of the one mind, and this was a perfect place to start, and we'll have lots more wonderful discussions like this. But I thank you for this wonderful call.
Yes,
it was wonderful.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Fun.
It was great.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was cool. The things that we talked about, I'll put in the show notes, including links to Dell and also to the gracious steps that are in the book Living in Grace, the shift to spiritual perception that Dell talked about in it. And I really would appreciate it if you'd let me know how you liked it in the comments on the website or on iTunes, or give us a rating on iTunes. Anything that you can do to help us share this, I would so appreciate it. I can't tell you how much. So until next time. Shift the story.